Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you today, and our guest today was influential in my life way back in the 1980s when I was part of the Coalition of American Pro-Life University Students, and we brought Stephen Mosher to speak at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. He spoke on his book, The Broken Earth, and Stephen Mosher's courage was inspirational to me back when he was revealing the human rights violations going on in communist China so many years ago. And that influenced me to run for student body president of Cal Poly and eventually as the pro-life candidate for governor in Colorado in 1994. So Stephen Mosher has been an influence in my life for a number of years, and he has exposed the atrocities of one of the most cruel and wicked governments in the present world, that is the Chinese Communist government. And he continues to do his work. And his latest book, by the way, is Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to the World Order. And we welcome Stephen Mosher to our program today. Stephen, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here to talk to you about China.
Yes, and China has been on your heart for a very long time. How did you start out working on the Chinese problem?
Well, I was in the doctoral program at Stanford University many years ago when China suddenly lifted the bamboo curtain and made it possible for American scholars to go to China. And I had the privilege, the honor of being the first American social scientist allowed to do field work in China. I was in South China in the province of Guangdong in the Pearl River Delta, living in a Chinese people's commune for a year. I was picked for that because I speak, read, and write Chinese. And my people in the State Department, the people at the National Security Council in the White House, the people at the National Science Foundation thought that I would be able to gather a lot of information about how life had changed over the last 30 years of communist rule. And I did get a lot of information. I also got in a lot of trouble for the information that I gathered.
Because ultimately, China had not changed much. And I think that's really a theme of many of your books, that China continues to be a repressive state. And that's a continuing legacy, really, through the millennia, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting because China is the one great alternative civilization to Western civilization, to historic Christendom. And China went in a very different direction than Western civilization did. At the same time that, you know, Moses was bringing from Mount Sinai, at the same time that David, 1000 B.C., was ruling ancient Israel, at the same time that the Greeks, 500 years later, that were listening to the plays of Sophocles and others, Euripides, and the Romans were practicing the rule of law and had a republican form of government. China was going in the opposite direction. China was going in the direction of an all-controlling, all-powerful, centralized totalitarian state. And what people need to know is that China, several hundred years before the birth of Christ, actually invented bureaucratic totalitarianism. So, you know, if you hear people say, well, you know, bureaucratic totalitarianism, communism came from Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin, they're wrong. Because China predates them. It developed that system of government 2,000 years before Karl Marx was ever born. And what they had 2,000 years ago was a secret police. They had political commissars in the military. They had concentration camps. The inmates built the Great Wall and the Great Canals of China. They had a state ideology. They burned the books of competing ideologies. They killed scholars with competing ideas. The ruler, the god emperor, was an absolute ruler who had a cult of personality that basically deified him and made his edicts almost you know, divine in that sense. At least that was his aspiration. So everything we associate with modern Marxist-Leninism was actually found in China over 2,000 years ago. We think about China, we think about the inventions of gunpowder and the compass as being Chinese inventions. But perhaps the most weighty, perhaps the most significant Chinese invention of all was this system of government, bureaucratic totalitarianism, which we see in China alive and well today. Mm-hmm. The Chinese Communist Party is nothing but the modern version of ancient Chinese one-party dictatorship. Xi Jinping is nothing more than the latest emperor, the second red emperor, I call him. The first was Chairman Mao Zedong.
Mm-hmm.
And so the system has survived for 2,000 years, and it is self-perpetuating. These people do not want to give up power. They see Christianity as a threat to their power. They see the free press, the rule of law, property rights, anything that diminishes their power, they are absolutely opposed to, because they want to perpetuate their own rule, and they're very good at it.
And Stephen, it seems that many people have the impression that the old Mao repressive state has relaxed a bit, and there's something of a free market capitalism that is active in China. Has the repression relaxed at all in the last 30 to 40 years?
No. What happened in China in 1989, June 4th of 1989, was China's 10 years of economic opening and liberalization and reform, which might have led, if it was allowed to continue, to respect for human rights and a more open and free society, was crushed on Tiananmen Square. I call it the Tiananmen Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people were killed in the streets of Beijing, and other people were killed in other cities of China by a government led by then-leader Deng Xiaoping, who was intent upon staying in power. He told the military, if you must shed a little blood, go ahead and do it. And that's always been the position of the Chinese Communist Party. It rules by force and the threat of force, and it does not hesitate to shed blood. That was the turning point.
Okay.
And since then, we have seen China move back towards this historic bureaucratic totalitarianism. And we're now in the middle of a new high-tech cultural revolution. It doesn't consist of a million young Red Guards standing in Tiananmen Square waving their little red books and shouting slogans from the same little red book of Chairman Mao. But it consists of a high-tech cultural revolution where people in China have to download the writings of Xi Jinping on their cell phones, on their Huawei phones or their iPhones, and they have to study the writings of Xi Jinping for half an hour every day, and they have to answer questions about what they've studied. And if they do that, they get points in their political credit score, their social credit score, and they can be promoted and get bonuses. If they fail to do their daily study session with Chairman Xi Jinping, then they can be demoted, they can lose their bonuses, and ultimately they can be fired. So what we're seeing today is a kind of high-tech cultural revolution that's being used in China by high-tech means. If you jaywalk in Beijing today,
mm-hmm.
The video surveillance cameras will see you.
Right.
Face recognition technology will pick up your face, identify you, and your bank account will be automatically deducted by, say, 150 yuan.
Wow.
Without any human intervention necessary at all. That's a high-tech surveillance state. People are under 24/7 surveillance by the state using big data, artificial intelligence, and the other means that the state uses to stay in control. It's 1984 come alive.
Right. It's the Orwellian state for sure. Well, the Christian group has grown in its influence in China for the last 30 to 40 years. I mean, we've certainly seen that the underground church and the Three Self Church as well have expanded. But just the last 6 to 7 years, we have been covering many instances of persecution in China almost every day on our Worldview in 5 minutes feature. And so it seems to me that they are cranking up the persecution of Christians again.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes back to Xi Jinping, who mm-hmm. is a Maoist.
Right.
And he's been in power since late 2012. And in early 2013, the Communist Party Central Committee published a directive, a secret directive, Directive Number 9 of 2012. And it lays out what the party intends to do to stay in power. And one of the things it intends to do is to prevent the growth of civil society, prevent the growth of Christianity and other religions, because it sees those things as a threat to its continued rule. So the persecution really did begin, as you say, mm-hmm. 6 or 7 years ago mm-hmm. with Xi Jinping's ascension to power. Mm-hmm. And what we see now in China today is the persecution picking up, not just of Christians and home churches and Catholics, although they're under very severe persecution, but all forms of religious expression in China, mm-hmm. regardless of whether you're in Tibet or in the Muslim areas or Buddhists or even the ancient Taoist folk religion. Their temples are being torn down. Their shrines are being devastated. Their leaders are being arrested. So it really is across the board persecution. But I think of all the religions, the Chinese Communist Party fears Christianity first.
Right.
First of all, because there are so many of us now in China.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably more than 100 million Christians in China of various kinds.
Incredible.
And the Chinese Communist Party sees that number as a threat to its continued rule.
Do you think that that freedom has a chance in China? It seems to me that, you know, with the rise of Christian influence, there could be something of a shot for freedom. I mean, think of these lawyers that are being put in prison. At least they're fighting the good fight, and I'm not sure that was happening in the 1950s. So it does seem like maybe freedom has a chance. Is there a way the Chinese can press for reforms from the inside? And what can America do? What can we do in terms of our foreign policy?
Well, I think there is. The world is never without hope.
I mean,
our hope is in Jesus Christ.
That's right.
And we know that ultimately he triumphs.
Mm-hmm.
And the faith is spreading. The faith has always spread under persecution.
That's right.
And if we enter another, we seem to be entering another Nero-like persecution, to go back to the days of the Roman Empire. The faith will spread in the underground church, in the home churches. People will continue to meet and pray in their homes, even though it's now illegal under the new regulations that came into effect on February 1st of last year for people to do that.
Hmm.
People will continue to meet and pray, even if their churches are torn down.
That's right.
And people need to know that churches in China, even the three self-churches, even the patriotic churches, the churches that are supposed to be permitted by the government, that are legal under the government regulations, are now being torn down as well, because officials throughout China are tearing down churches on the pretense that, well, you only need one church in this area. You've got 10, so we're going to tear down 9 and leave you with the one church. So the buildings are going down, but, God is in the heart of the believers. So
that's right.
That's the ultimate sanctuary, and that's the sanctuary that even the Chinese Communist Party cannot penetrate and destroy.
What about America's foreign policy, Stephen? How can America put proper pressure on China? It seems to me they pretty much ignore us, but is there any way that our foreign policy could press towards some protection of Christian believers and others persecuted by the repressive state there?
Well, I think I've always believed that Chinese leaders are worried first and foremost about losing face in the eyes of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if we publicly criticize Xi Jinping and the other members of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party, they will lose face. And there also is the Magnitsky Act, where we can take people in charge of the persecution of Chinese officials who are involved in persecuting, arresting, and torturing believers. We can put them on a list of people to be denied travel to the United States, to have any assets they have in this country confiscated. And I think we ought to be doing that as well. Finally, I do think that the economic pressure that we're putting on China right now, because of China's long time cheating on trade,
mm-hmm.
because of China's theft of intellectual property, its manipulation of its currency, the litany of the Chinese attacks on the United States is long and continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the economic pressure that the tariffs are putting on China, I think that is going to send a real shock through the system. That may very well send the Chinese economy into recession. And what the Chinese Communist Party has said for the last 30 years is basically this. You may not like us. You may understand that we're a tyrannical one-party dictatorship, but we're going to make China great. We're going to make you prosperous. And so for your own personal material gain, you need to support us. Well, if that material gain, if that prosperity begins to disappear, because we're finally calling China out on its cheating on trade, then I think that will send a shockwave through the system and might lead to some some reform, some change.
Mm-hmm.
So there is hope. There's always hope.
One of the most egregious crimes that the Chinese government have brought upon their people was the forced abortions, forced infanticide, the one child per family rule. That was probably one of the, if not the most egregious violations of human rights. And you brought that out in the 1980s. Has any of that relaxed in the last couple of years?
Well, here's what's happened with the one-child policy. Let me say at the outset that, you know, I was in the operating room when they were doing forced abortions on mm-hmm. women in China who were 7, 8, and 9 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing those abortions Horrible. By cesarean section. They were mm-hmm. killing babies
Terrible.
By lethal injection. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the brutality of the one-child policy up close and personal.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 40 years, they have killed 400 million people in the one-child policy, okay?
Mm.
This is the longest-running and most deadly political campaign in Chinese history. The total death toll from that the Chinese Communist Party has inflicted on the Chinese people is probably, if you include the purges of the 50s, the Cultural Revolution of the 60s, the following going persecution, and the ongoing execution of tens of thousands of people every year, the total death toll from communism in China is probably 500 million people.
Hmm.
So this is the biggest killing machine in history.
Yeah.
And yet now they realize they've gone too far. They've relaxed, several years ago, they relaxed the one-child policy to allow two children. But people said, no, after two generations of only children, we don't want two children. And so now they're moving in China to a mandatory two-child policy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe before we're done, we will see forced pregnancy in China. Why? Because the Chinese Communist Party, the geniuses who run the Chinese Communist Party, have killed off a half of the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
They have a labor shortage. They have an aging and dying population. And they are desperate to have more people.
Mm-hmm.
And so having thinned the herd too much, they're now going to go back and try to build up the herd by encouraging or forcing people to have children.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come full circle, haven't we?
Yes, yes. Are you hearing anything about a rising pro-life movement out of the Protestant or the Catholic Christians in China? I think I've heard some stirrings. What have you heard?
Well, I know that for many, many years we have helped women in China who are fleeing forced abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And by giving them sanctuary and safe houses. But even though the policy now is one of encouraging and maybe moving towards a little bit of coercion of in terms of a two-child policy, it is still illegal in China for single women to have babies.
Mm-hmm.
So any woman who's not married who gets pregnant is still subject to a forced abortion. So mm-hmm. the safe houses that we run are still full.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Christians of all stripes are trying to help where they can, mitigate the brutality of this regime.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes in the pro-life area as well, by helping women in crisis pregnancies and by starting orphanages and taking care of abandoned children. Now, that's something I think that Christians have always done, even going back to the early days of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's encouraging to see the rising, you know, Christian influence in that country, because ultimately, China has never had a strong Christian influence until the recent, you know, 20, 30 years. So that's positive. That minority of Christians could make a difference on that nation.
Absolutely. I think that we make a difference wherever we go.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a good leaven now of Christians in China who are working in various ways to turn that society into one that respects individual rights, that respects the idea that we're not just animals, that we're not just a little higher than the apes, we're actually just a little lower than the angels.
That's right.
And if they can raise the level of society a little bit, all of China will benefit.
Hmm. Is there any hope for Christian families in China that want to exempt themselves or their children from secular state-run educational systems and and use private schools, Christian schools, homeschools?
That has been a no-go area for the Chinese Communist Party. Okay. For a lot of time, for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese Communist Party has always understood the importance of being in charge of the education of the youth. And I remember one time when I was in China, 10 years ago, I visited a village that was entirely Christian.
Mm.
It had been Christian for centuries.
Mm.
They had their own church. They had their own medical clinic. And then they decided to build their own school. And that was a no-no in the
mm-hmm.
eyes of local officials.
Mm-hmm.
They came and said to the leaders of that Christian community, you must shut down the school. It wasn't the church. They were willing to allow the church to stand and the medical clinic to stand. But the idea that Christians should be acceptable to them. So it's very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Under the new religious regulations, churches are not allowed to teach catechism.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to hold Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to teach religion to anyone under the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
The new religious regulations say that no one under the age of 18 is to be allowed in churches themselves. So they're determined, I think, the Chinese Communist Party, to try to keep the faith from being passed along to the next generation. They will fail, of course, in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for people to know that that the party is trying
mm-hmm.
to eliminate religion among young people. Some young people in schools have been required to sign contracts pledging to promote atheism and to reject deism. That's how far the state is going in this direction.
Well, let's wrap this up, Stephen. I just want to encourage our audience to get involved at some level. And what would you say to the average Christian family out there that's listening to this program and wants to make an impact, wants to somehow encourage our brothers and sisters in China?
Well, we can always help, of course, by praying for the suffering church in China
mm-hmm.
and for our beleaguered brothers and sisters throughout that country. It may also be possible to reach out to exchange students and students from China who are here in the United States for study and share the gospel with them. They become reverse missionaries, as it were, going back to China and spreading the faith. I've run into a lot of people like that over the years, and I think they do have a real impact when they go back to China. And there are still missionaries engaged in the difficult, increasingly the difficult day-to-day work of evangelization in China itself. Some have been asked to leave, in some cases very suddenly, but others remain in place. And so any support you can give to them, I'm sure would go a long way towards helping to spread the faith. The Chinese people are spiritually hungry for something beyond the blatant materialism that is the only thing that the Communist Party has to offer them.
Our guest today, Stephen Mosher, he is the author of The Broken Earth and more recently, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. And if you would like a clear, concise, and thorough understanding of Chinese culture, Chinese history, and the Chinese problems that confront the nation today, I would encourage you to grab a copy of one of these books, any of the books produced by our guest today, Stephen Mosher. Thank you, Stephen. We appreciate you joining us on the program.
Thank you for all you do.
This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.